You are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl. It is a program aired on Global Community Radio. I'm your host, Nicole Garland. This is my second show. If you missed the first show, you can find all the info you need is on intellectualthoughtsofateengirl.blogspot.com. I think last week's program is off to a great start, and I wanted to continue that momentum. I am going to be talking about my personal life again, so I must warn you. What you are going to hear is going to be hard for some people to hear. I don't want you to pity me. This is done purely in understanding and relating. I've been through a lot to make myself stronger. So, for my show, I will be talking about controversial topics that may upset people. My intention is not to make people upset, but to bring light to issues that are affecting us today. I'm very young, but I'm also very mature, and I believe that it is me, my audience, and my guests can freely talk about these issues in a respectful manner. I want people to be able to have a safe and comfortable environment where people can respectfully speak what's on their mind. That being said, if things cannot be maintained, I will be pulling these topics from my show. So, let's get right into it. So, I wanted to talk to you today because I'm going to be having a guest on my show. His name is Sean Lay. He is a very, very good friend of mine. And we just wanted to show you guys kind of a little bit of what we always talk about every time we talk on the phone and other things like that. He is a flight attendant, so I will be talking to him because I thought his job was very interesting, too. So, I wanted to talk to you guys. So, when I was in my freshman year of high school, you know, that's the time where you're expressing yourself and finding who you are. Well, when I was a teenager, I did not make the best decisions as far as romantic relationships. And I had gotten into a relationship that I'm not very proud of. So, I'm not going to repeat his name because out of respect, I just don't want to. There's already so many issues with that anyway. But I'm going to talk about our kind of relationship. And I know some of you were thinking like, oh no, what is she going to talk about? Or why is she going to be talking about these kinds of things? But I just needed to get this off my chest so you can understand a little bit more of how I am. So when we started going out, everything was nice. We used to go on dates. He used to bring me roses. He used to tell me that he cared about me a lot. And then he really paid attention to me. And things were getting harder in high school because I was not able to deal with the kind of household I was brought up with my adoptive family. And so I went to him every time I needed help. I went to him every time I needed guidance because I was going through a lot with my adoptive parents and I couldn't handle the way that they were treating me. So I would go to him very often. I would go to visit him. He was always sweet. He was always caring. And then one day, he wasn't. And it was very, very hard for me to understand, very confusing because he was sweet and then he was not. So one day, I had came to him and he felt like his mind had switched, like his personality was different. It wasn't that he had multiple personality, it's just he wasn't acting himself that day, and he said very, very, very hurtful things to me, and we had gotten into a fight. It wasn't a physical fight, it was a verbal fight in the beginning, and immediately after we started fighting, I started to cry. And when I started to cry, he picked me up and said, oh no, I'm sorry, I'll never do that again. That's my split personality. And he would make excuses for it over and over. Me, because I really liked him and I really thought I could make this relationship work, I said, okay. And I said, we're going to continue to do this. We are going to fix this. And Each and every time we used to get in a fight about the little things, if I talked to a boy at school or if I was hanging around some of my friends that are girls, and he would have issues with that, he would get jealous, he would yell at me. And then one day it started to progress and get worse. He used to hit me, and every time we argued, I was always slapped or I was hit, and I didn't appreciate it. And I loved him. Every time he told me he was sorry and that he loved me, I believed him. So things like that kept going on, and it kept getting worse and worse. And he was older than me. He was a little bit over, he was over the age of 18, so he was already an adult, he was already doing his thing. And I decided, because I wanted someone a little bit more mature, I decided to look out of my age group in high school, and I decided to look for someone older. Because of the way my mindset was, and I thought that people that were older would generally be able to relate to me more because I had gone through so much. So I ended up believing him every time he told me he loved me, and every time he told me, oh, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Or there were times where the next day he would completely forget about it, and when I asked him about it, he said he never did that. And so that went on for quite a few months, and then one day he wanted me to come over. So I came over to his house, and he was showing me that he had gotten a registered gun. And by this point already, the cops had been called like 3 or 4 times on us, and he was charged twice with a domestic violence charge. At the time, I didn't think nothing of it because, oh, that's cool, he got a gun, that's so cool, we can go shooting sometimes, he can help me be able to defend myself and everything. So I thought everything was okay and that it was super cool, but then it got worse. That same day, we got in a really bad fight. He had told me that I had never loved him and that I never cared about him. So he decided to think that it was funny to put the gun against my head. Of course, the safety was on, but he kept trying to pretend to pull the trigger and threatened that he was going to pull the trigger. He had threatened that he was going to kill me and that my life didn't mean anything. And things like, the things that he said, he would say over and over. He'd call me very horrible names, things that I'm not allowed to say on the, not allowed to say on air. So, things got definitely worse. I mean, things were not cool at all. After that one time, I knew something was wrong, but I was stuck in that spiral of loving him, and it was just this cycle where one day I'd wake up, we'd be cuddling, and then he'll get mad at me, and then we'll start fighting, and then after we start fighting, I feel guilty, so I say sorry, he says sorry, I try to prove to him why we're worth it, and why we should be together, because he's feeling guilty, and then we make up, and then it was that same cycle. And eventually it became that same cycle every single day. And he would always have that gun to my head and saying, oh, you wish you were dead, huh? And things like that. And I didn't appreciate it. And one day I told him I had had enough. And that took a lot out of me because I've been talking to a lot of people who have gone through domestic violence abusers and things that they went through. And I want people to know that a lot of people get this misconception that we could have done something. And yes, we could have done something, but we were stuck in this cycle. And a lot of people don't understand it unless you've gone through it, that you love that person, or at least you think you do. And you think that it's either, because there's a lot of reasons why you stick with people. You could be sticking with them because you have nowhere else to go. No family, no friends. It could be because he's the only one that's there present in your life. You could love him. There's multiple reasons. And I want people to understand that we were stuck in this place where we couldn't do much. Or at least in that mindset of, oh, we can't do anything and that we're stuck. So I want people to understand that a lot of people in And a lot of the girls that I've asked that have gone through the same thing, we all want you to know that, yeah, we get a lot of crap for that. We get a lot of things that are, we get a lot of comments that are very mean about what we went through, and I don't think anyone understands how scary it is to have someone right there in front of you, putting a gun to your head and telling you you wish you were dead, or that they would try to get you to say things that you didn't want to say within yourself. And that's very degrading for a human being. And I don't think any human being should ever have to go through that. But of course we do. And so as I want to roll into this, I want to tell you, or I want to ask you, how you guys feel about domestic violence abusers having guns at all. I wanted to talk about the kinds of things that the government's background checks haven't checked for. And I wanted to talk a little bit, not about my views exactly on gun control, but more of along the lines of, more along the lines of why certain people should not be allowed to have a gun. And I know I'm going to get a lot of people saying, oh, we have our Third Amendment, it's in the Constitution that we have the right to bear arms. And I understand that completely. But there are certain things, depending on the person, if they are allowed to have a gun, they can do very, very, very dangerous things. And so with that being said, I would like to introduce my guest. So I'm going to be talking on the phone with Sean. I don't know if you guys have been listening. My show is called Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl. If you would like to know more information about my show or how to download a podcast, the link is all there at Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl at blogspot.com. or .blogspot.com. And if you guys would like to email me, because if there's anything, any comments, any feedback that you want to express to me, please email me at intellectualthoughtsofateengirl@gmail.com. That would be greatly appreciated if you receive, if you would like to talk to me about the show and things that I've said, so I can get more of an idea of what my audience would like me to talk about for the next time. So I wanted to introduce Sean to the show. I'm going to be calling him from my phone, so you're going to hear the ring, and I hope that I will make the ring short so you don't have to listen to it, but I will definitely be on the show with Sean Lay, and here we go. Hello, Sean?
Hey, this is Sean.
Hey, Sean, hey. This is Nikki. So, yeah, hey. I am recording live, and I wanted to ask you some questions. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, so I had already discussed to my audience that I was going to talk about domestic violence and gun control, so I wanted your opinion on it. And because I wanted to talk about gun control, I wanted to ask your personal take on domestic violence abusers and having guns. Should they have them?
You're talking about the people who are violent, or the victims of domestic violence?
Yes, the people who are already charged with domestic violence. How are they able to get registered guns through the government?
That's a really good question. I think there's two approaches to it. I think one approach is that we want to give everybody accountability and responsibility. For example, the idea would be to give, like a guy or girl with a charge like that a weapon and expect that they are somehow able to overcome that urge to harm others and make the choice not to. The other approach is to approach them as if they are not worthy of that free will, so to speak, and that would be to take the gun away from them. I think the bigger question might be, why would people live with people who are violent like that? So I guess I have to ask, the person with the domestic violence charge, Izzy, or is she, has she overcome, or has she changed from being a violent person to being a non-violent person, so to speak? If they are still violent, what will be the reason that their spouse or partner are still with them?
Yeah, of course. I get your viewpoint there. I also wanted to ask you, do you think that our gun laws are efficient enough? Do you think that the background checks are thorough enough?
The background checks, do you think they're good enough?
Yes.
It's a really loaded question. And I think there are answers on both sides. On one hand, if we look at Mexico, for example, they do have, you know, gun control, gun regulations. But they also have, like, some of the most violent, obviously gang groups and things like that down there. And, but then you look at countries like England, you know, they do have gun control, and they still have people, you know, stabbing people with knives. And there's actually recently I saw a post that shows, like, a drop-off box, and it says that, you know, only manly people, you know, or only basically weak people, you know, carrying knives, and ask people to drop their knives into that box. Mm-hmm. So once you get down to that level, you know, the difference between a knife and a kitchen knife and pen, you know, if the intention is to harm another person, then, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. If you can't even have knives, you know, someone could, you know, take out, like, a kitchen knife, a stick, a flash. In certain cases, it's even easier to kill or harm someone with those kind of makeshift weapons than, say, a traditional knife. So I think the situation is very complex. It depends on what kind of the neighborhood you're in, you know, what kind of cop populations, what kind of personalities, cultures that people have.
So in your opinion, do you think that the government, the U.S. government gun laws are efficient enough? In your opinion?
I think the simple answer is no. The simple answer is no, because we still have, you know, problems with that. We still have people getting killed. We still have people getting injured from, you know, guns and things like that. So obviously there's always more, you know, more things that we can do. Then you're getting on the topic of why do we have the Second Amendment in the first place? And that, I think, touches a completely different issue than having guns for self-defense reasons and things like that. Without knowing, you know, if there are any more additional questions to that. So, first of all, I want to ask if that answers your question. And if you have any additional questions to that, because I would love to talk about the Second Amendment.
Yes, I had a question. Because you had said that our gun laws are inefficient enough, are there solutions that you would like to implement to make things a lot easier as far as gun laws? To make things a little bit... Go ahead.
I have some ideas, and I talk with other people. And I think one solution is that I think that will satisfy both sides, the people who are for gun control and against gun control, is that I don't think we realize how flexible the Second Amendment could be. You know, yes, we do have the laws. You know, laws are like, you know, the bones of your body. But just because you have bones, it's something hard, something straight, doesn't mean you can't bend it. Doesn't mean you can't twist it. You know, your vertebrae is meant to, you know, twist back and forth. You're able to bend over and things like that. And we can do that through interpretation. For example, the Second Amendment states pretty clearly something to the effect of a well-regulated militia. So right there, you know, you can say that the word regulated militia could imply that we can, you know, have gun control in certain places, such as densely populated areas where people have the tendency to commit violence. And maybe gun control for those areas might be best. For example, certain restaurants, universities, things like that. On the other hand, it says the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And the word arms, for example, it could mean anything from pens, education, weapons. For example, if you just have the weapons, if you just have the guns, and not the insight, not the intelligence, not the awareness, you can't use it too well. For example, self-defense training, the ability to conduct reconnaissance, you know, those kind of things are just equally as important in the purpose of bearing arms than actually just having a gun. You know, I could give you a gun without the ammo, without anything, without training.
Again. Sorry.
All right, that was pretty funny. For example, I would say that you can do much more with simple awareness, the know-how, to where the harm is, where the perpetrator is, with a rock, than if I give you an AK-47, an AR-15, but you have no idea how to use it, or you have no training whatsoever. You know, it's actually very hard to hit a target without training with a pistol, for example. So bearing arms is a lot more, there's a lot more to it than just having a gun, you know. Again, this is when it comes to reinterpretation of the law. So I just gave two examples of how words in the Constitution could be reinterpreted, could be, sometimes you can twist it if necessary. For example, in the countryside, there's not a lot of people. The risk of someone, coming out with automatic weapon and killing everybody, it's very slim. So there's no reason to have a strict gun control regulations in like the rural areas of Texas or Alabama, for example. You know, people use guns to go hunting. And in densely populated areas, there is a concern of like an unlikely scenario that the government might become tyrannical and you will need a gun to defend yourself, defend your rights, defend your...
Go.
Okay. And the risk of, meeting those scenarios, the unlikely scenario of a tyrannical government trying to take your rights away and things like that, is just not worth, having the lives lost. Because the Declaration of Independence says that persons and governments have liberty, life, and pursuit of happiness. So there it goes. There's your life. So there's balance between liberty and life. So my point is that you can do a lot with the words. Reinterpret them and thinking outside the box when it comes to the applications.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. That is his Sean Lay's take on gun control. All right, so you are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl. If you liked that, I would recommend that you send any of your feedback and any of your questions for me or for Sean to intellectualthoughtsofateenagegirl@gmail.com. And if you missed part of the show or you wanted to check back in and listen to this over again, I have my blog, and my blog is www.intellectualthoughtsofateengirl.blogspot.com with all the information to my show and to listen in if you decide to. All right, we're back with Sean, and we're going to talk about what he does for a living. So, Sean, tell us what you do for a living.
Yeah, sure. In short, I'm a flight attendant. I'm a Mandarin Chinese-speaking flight attendant for an international airline.
Yeah, and with your experience as a flight attendant, what kinds of things do you have to deal with?
Oh, well, it's a two-part job. One side is safety and security. The other, it's obviously customer service. And the customer service side is more visible. It's what people think about when they think of flight attendants. But there's also the safety, emergency management, and a security side that we don't like to talk about as much publicly, at least.
Yeah. If there's any stories you want to tell the audience, go ahead.
I have lots of stories. Are there any kind of stories that you're...
Whatever story or whatever things that you want to tell us about your job, go ahead and tell us.
Okay, I can speak a little bit about the training that we have. Like I said before, a lot of the training is on security, safety, and emergency management. We were on training to obviously evacuate the airplane, use crowd control you know, principals and training to get everybody out safely if there's an engine fire and, you know, we're on the runway, scenarios like that. Also, firefighting, also medical emergencies, and also, you know, we deal with, you know, certain passengers that are maybe from belligerent to being violent. We have sex cuffs on the airplane that we can use if we need to restrain somebody, and along with other tools that they give us. Luckily, you know, after the, you know, 9/11 incident, we're not, you know, like, most passengers pretty well behaved. I used to be a security guard for a while before I became a flight attendant, and I can tell you that most, you know, passengers I deal with, the worst passengers I deal with on the airplane are probably easier to deal with than some of the people I dealt with, being a security guard. But there's a difference, you know, is that, being a security guard, it's easy for me to be able to, you know, yell at someone, hey, you know, do this and that. As being a flight attendant, a lot of times I have to be more methodical, more polite, and more tactful in dealing with my passengers. Most of the job is just, you know, serving drinks, obviously, you know, serving food, you know, observing, monitoring, you know, passengers, babysitting. And I've seen some, you know, coworkers that really went above and beyond to help passengers, you know, without any recognitions whatsoever.
Yeah. Sean, tell me about a couple places you've been and why you like those places.
Yeah, sure. You know, I like, you know, all places. Obviously, you know, every place has something, you know, something offered. But I, because of my language qualifications, I do fly to China a lot. I fly to mainly Shanghai, Beijing, and Hong Kong. And, there's a lot of different culture, you know, going on. There's a lot of different, you know, very interesting things you can observe about people, about the place, and everything. There's a joke that a coworker told me, is that, you know, he was commenting on the cultural differences between Beijing, which tend to be, you know, the capital of China, Shanghai, which is the business center, kind of, you know, what they're known as, of China, and Hong Kong, which is known for, you know, the martial arts, kung fu movies, and eating. He loves to eat. So the joke goes, you know, there's a UFO that came down, and you know, these little green aliens that came out of the UFO, and the Beijing people saw the aliens, and they're like, hey, you know, I wonder what their political system's like on their home planet. And the Shanghai people were like, hey, you know, I wonder if we can do business with them. You know, maybe they have a lot of money or whatever. And the Hong Kong people saw the green aliens and said, hey, I wonder what they taste like. that's just a joke, you know. And there's a lot of these, you know, and obviously they're stereotypes. They're not completely true, and they're probably a lot more complex than that, you know. I like going to different countries and, you know, observing their culture. And, you know, there's a lot of things to do. It's interesting.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Sean. It was really great to have you on the show, and I'm sure my audience has found your answers very interesting.
All right. Yeah, that's good.
All right. You have a good night, Sean. All right. So, this is Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl. And if you had any comments or feedback on the show, you can email me at intellectualthoughtsofateenagegirl@gmail.com. And you can also view our website at intellectualthoughtsofateengirl@blogspot.com. You are listening to Global Community Radio.